back to Ed Gaines Radio. Here's another quote that I think is apropos from Charles Barkley from our interview from yesterday.
And we consider them stars at such a much younger age. I just stress to them, be the best you can be. I'm very happy with my career. I exceeded all my expectations. And I just really want guys, I just want to watch great players. That's the best thing. That's the best thing about sports, the greatest players. People don't pay absurd amount of money just to go watch the game. They go to watch greatness.
They go to watch greatness. So, Leilani Munter, as you pushed yourself and made the choice to go into NASCAR, tell us what on earth, what craziness possessed you to risk your life?
Okay, I just wanted to clarify one thing when you mentioned that I was an actress. I actually never was an actress. I just did stunt doubling, and I was doing stunts like for different actresses. I stood in. I was a photo double for Catherine Zeta-Jones. But I never actually was an actress. I sort of just made a bunch of money doing that, working behind the scenes kind of on the movies, and then I take all that money going to the racetrack. So I didn't want people to get the wrong impression that I was ever an actress.
Okay, well, let's just say that you did your basics, you got started in that, but what was the transition? You grew up, you went to Saguaro High School in the Phoenix area in Scottsdale, Arizona. You went to UCSD, University of San Diego in California, and studied marine biology. That's a long way from NASCAR.
It is a long way from NASCAR. The way that it started out, I always definitely had a thing for speed, and I remember when I first got my driver's license in Arizona, in the first year that I was driving, I had so many speeding tickets. I lived in Fountain Hill, which is about a 45-minute drive from where my high school is.
So you're driving down Shea. You got most of those on Shea. I can just see it now.
Yeah, exactly. So anyways, within the first year of me getting my license, I had so many speeding tickets that I got a letter from the state saying that I was a danger to society and I needed to attend this class or they were going to yank my license. And so I always had a thing for speed, but I really didn't, you know, do anything about it until later when I was in college and I was going to school at UCSD for biology. And I went to just watch a car club race. And this is one of the races where you're just, like, racing against the clock, and they've got cones set up, and you're just doing these little, you know, made-up road courses and timing yourself against other people. And I just I ended up racing that day, and I had so much fun that I, you know, really developed a thing for racing and off the street. And I eventually started going to racing school once I could afford it. I mean, I was in college when I first discovered how much I loved racing, but, you know, starving college student doesn't have a whole lot of money to go bang up race cars on the weekend. So it wasn't until after I got out of college with my degree and I started earning money. Part of that was working, you know, in the movies. I worked on a couple of movies for Catherine Zeta-Jones. And, you're busy working so much when you work on those movies that you don't really have time to spend any of the money that you're making. So it's a good way to make a lot of money, and I was saving it up. And then I just started spending it all going to the racetrack.
How expensive is that? How expensive is it for somebody listening now that thinks, you know, I've got the right kind of reflexes and the vision, I've got the guts and the character, I've got the athleticism. What kind of commitment would they have to make over the next, say, 2 years financially and in terms of time to even have a chance?
Well, I pretty much dropped everything and moved to North Carolina after I got sponsorship. What I paid for myself was really just the racing schools in the beginning to get me qualified for some different series. And then, you know, if you're thinking stock cars, like what I started doing when I moved to North Carolina, which is called a late model stock car, which is sort of your Saturday night weekly racing series, those teams are spending, you know, upwards of $100,000 a year in a season of late models, you know, between the tires and the motors and all the money that you spend with the crew and traveling, the hauler, taking care of the race car, things that go wrong, those cars, you know, things break. You got a lot of moving parts on those things, and you have to replace those. So it's pretty expensive. I have never raced without sponsorship. I don't have the money to do that. I've never, you know, paid for myself to go into a race because it's just so expensive, I can't afford it. So for me, what was really important when I moved to North Carolina was I was spending a lot of my time, you know, talking to sponsors and getting enough money to go to the track. And then, you know, I'd usually get a one-race or a two-race deal, and then I'd you know, be back to the drawing board, and I'd be out searching for sponsors. So, you know, I spent a lot of time working at racing schools out here as an instructor, and I still do that here and there. Like next week I'm giving ride-alongs in my race car at Lowe's Motor Speedway. So I did a lot of other things besides race. I wasn't able to just, you know, jump in the car because I didn't have that kind of money. But whenever I got...
So how fast are you going?
It all depends on what track you're going, what track you're at. Like, for instance, the races that I've running this year have mainly been on short tracks, half miles and smaller. I have, you know, I race Texas Motor Speedway, that's a mile and a half. I have Phoenix coming up, which is a mile. So the most part, the shorter tracks, you know, you're doing, depending on the racetrack and how big the banking is, how quick you're going, but, you know, we're doing like 18-second laps at the half miles. You know, I don't know, I'm guessing, because we don't even really have, we don't have speedometers in there, we're just seeing RPMs. I would say, you know, you're probably at some point getting to like 130 or so before you're getting out of the gas, braking really hard to take the corner. On the bigger tracks, you know, like Texas Motor Speedway, we ran with restrictor plates on our super late models. Our cars are not really built to go that fast. So while they get up to about 185, we had restrictor plates bringing us down to, I think, around 155, 160. Now, when
well,
I
you've been paying
to
your,
ARCA...
You've been,
huh?
Go ahead. I was going to say, you've been paying your dues, but now you're taking a step to ARCA now, which is a whole new level.
Right. When I go to ARCA, then when I step up to ARCA, that is essentially an Xtel Cup car, and it's just a different series, a different sanctioning body. But it's very similar to an Xtel Cup car in the dimensions of the car and, you know, the bodies on the car and the motors. So, you know, my first race will be at Daytona and ARCA, and, you know, we're doing around 195, I believe, at those tracks. And obviously with drafting, when you're drafting with the other cars, you know, it helps to go a little bit faster. So
does that feel different, though?
Oh, sorry?
Does that feel different, 195 in a straightaway? Does that feel that different from 130s of coming around the bend in a half-mile track?
It doesn't. The short tracks actually feel faster because everything's happening so much quicker. The track is so much smaller. You've got a lot of cars on there. The short tracks, you know, to me, it feels faster on the short tracks. Because you're going so fast, you're on a smaller track. There's just as many cars on those little tracks. When you're on a big speedway, you know, big sweeping corners, you know, places like Daytona and Talladega, those super speedways, we actually have restrictor plates that go on our cars. So those cars would go up to well up to like 230 miles per hour, but because we don't have the downforce that the Indy cars have, they put restrictor plates on our cars that, you know, have them top out, cuts the horsepower from like 850 to like 450. So, you know, it takes a while for us to even get up to speed. And if you're ever at any of these big tracks like Daytona or Talladega where we run on the restrictor plates, you'll see that it takes a while for the car to get all the way up to that speed because our horsepower is so far down.
Let's shift to the subject of what it's like as a woman and the natural expectation I would have that you're dealing with a lot of sexism on the track, off the track as well. How hard has that been for you? I'm certainly you're an anomaly as a woman, an attractive woman in a dangerous sport. What was that transition like, and is it easier now after 4 years?
It's definitely easier now. It was really hard in the beginning, and I did have a lot of people, you know, just kind of, you're kidding me, right? Like, you do not do that, or you're not trying to do that, you know, basically telling me, you know, you're trying to do something that's impossible and it'll never happen. And, you know, it was difficult. I had definitely, you know, there's definitely people out there still now that just don't think that women should be in racing, and that's fine. You know, I've sort of come to the point where I know I'm not going to win everybody over, but I do have lots of people cheering for me, and I do get lots of letters from, you know, from men, from women, from little girls, from little boys, you know, saying that they're, you know, they support what I'm doing and that they're cheering for me and they're pulling for me. And so I try and just, I let the naysayers and the people that I know I'm never going to win over and will always believe that women shouldn't be in race cars no matter what we accomplish. I just try and put that out of my mind and not pay attention to them. But the more that I race and the more that I accomplish, you know, like this year I finished fourth at Texas Motor Speedway. I ran as high as third, and, you know, I set a new record for the highest finish for a female driver in the history of Texas Motor Speedway. And when you do things like that where you can you can point at this and say,
it's objective.
You know, well, how did I do that? You know, if you don't think that I can drive, you know, then how did I beat all those people? How did I finish fourth? If I can't drive a race car, then I shouldn't be able to do that, right? So the more things that I accomplish over time and the more times that I get to go out on the racetrack and I get to show that I have skill, the less, you know, the less negative comments I guess I receive from people.
We just got 1 minute left, Leilani, but we're talking with Leilani Munter, who is a rising NASCAR star, going to be hitting the ARCA series. If people want to, first of all, learn more about you, you can go to LeilaniMunter.com. That's LeilaniMunter.com. And if people want to learn more about how to sponsor you, do they go to your website? How do they support you?
If you go on the website, there's all the information there. We're moving up to ARCA next year, which is much more exposure. You know, it's got live national television package with it, and we get all the big tracks, so we're coupled. Like, you know, my first race of the year will be at Daytona on the same day as the Bud Shootout, so... it's definitely a higher level than I'm at now, and I'm really excited, really looking forward to it. We do have some sponsorship for next year, but we are looking to add some other sponsorship. So,
well, listen, we've got to go for now, but Leilani, can you check in with us in a month? We'll see how you're doing, find out how things went in Phoenix, actually, on November 9th, and
yep.
Maybe talk a little bit more about how marine biology and the discipline that you had academically has made you maybe a little bit more of an intelligent driver and a more consistent professional as well. Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Appreciate it.
Okay.
Leilani, you're the best. We'll see you in a month.
Okay, thanks.
Take care. When we come back, we're going to talk about U Sports Friday with Dr. Andrew Jacobs and Fred Eng on Head Games Radio, and whether coaches, parents, there needs to be some level of going into background checks to make sure some of the things like what happened this past week in Philadelphia where a parent pulled a gun on a coach don't happen. You're listening to Head Games Radio on Sports Byline. We'll be right back.